This week's episode was brought to you by Carissa Dione. If you would like to support The Whole Rabbit, please visit www.patreon.com, where your donation of just $5 a month not only keeps us making shows every single week, but it'll get you access to all our extended episodes, a 5x5 vinyl sticker of our bunny cover art, and access to our Discord server where we dispatch agents all over the globe to do the work of the Bunny Queen of Space herself. On this week's episode, we make good on our promise we made last week to take a deep dive into the Bardot Thodol, or, as it's more commonly known, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which is, at its core, a handbook for the recently deceased on how to navigate the afterlife, achieve enlightenment, or, for the less ambitious, a good reincarnation in a wealthy family that has force powers. Seriously. In the extended show, we discuss how to avoid hell, its tortures, and other specific issues such as reincarnating as a puppy, or demon, or a puppy demon. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
Can't hit it on the side of this table.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't want to damage it.
Girl I know does it with her teeth.
No!
I'm like waiting for the deer. It's gonna just shatter her face.
Does that make her teeth sharp and then it's unpleasant when she uses her mouth? I had a girlfriend once that constantly took fucking Adderall and Wellbutrin together and she had sharp teeth from grinding them.
Oh no, I have those.
See a shark girl go down on you?
Yeah. I learned the lip trick.
Oh, okay, I can put two and two together.
I can't.
I get my bottle opener.
Think of a fish.
Yeah, you don't.
And then put the lips on the inside of the mouth around the teeth.
Yeah, suck more dick, Luke.
Whoa!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Whole Rabbit, where we do more than just sit around and wait to die. Nay, we lay expectantly on our right side like some moistened trollop longing for the diamond-hard touch of death fast approaching, beckoned by the teasing of our fading breath as the guru reads us the all-vivid angel-demon waifu pornography of passing we alluded to in last week's episode, the Bardot Thodol, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, or if you prefer, How to Die Correctly. I'm your host, the Hacking Rabbit. I'm joined by my co-host, the Bloody Conch Drinking Devi, Mari Sama.
Greetings.
Darth Dingus, the Diver of the Demonic Duat.
I can't wait to tell everybody how I've been to hell.
And Malakorangon, the Fifth, Dweller of the Doorway.
Over the mountain right now.
I think this is the only self-help book that helps you avoid getting inside of pussy.
You waited all week to say that. Are you happy?
A little bit. Happy. I had a little death instead of a big one.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could say it's like it's really framed from the perspective of preventing you from getting born. But, you know, it does throw a couple of bones in there to those who the way it phrases it is not that anybody would actively choose to reincarnate. It's just it's a very unfortunate mishap that you must because it's very difficult to, as the book directly states it, rid oneself of unconscious bad tendencies, but it does show you how to go to heaven or not go to hell or not reincarnate at all and merge with what they call the clear light or the absolute state of being, absolute reality, Dharmakaya.
So that tendency for those bad qualities to go on and on and for you to go on and on throughout cycles, I believe is that wobbly wheel known as dukkha, that equates to suffering, and like what, the first noble truth? That life is basically a wobbly wheel. It's full of suffering. The bad tendencies tend to go on, and unless you address them, it'll always be that way.
It's full of extremes of pain and pleasure because one demands the other.
Yeah.
And that's the wobbly wheel. It's never in a state of balance or consistency.
It would like to be balanced, and you might have a better time if it is, but you can't always be assured that the tendencies will be balanced and that your wheel won't wobble, so to speak.
Even like in the Buddhist perspective, it's interesting, though, because even the intense desire for balance can throw you out of balance.
Exactly.
And it's all about how you approach.
That's why I always, in my own practice, I always pay attention to the opposite, because a lot of people actually put blinders on and they don't want to look at the problem. And part of addressing the balance problem and getting it right is actually seeing what the opposite extreme is, seeing what your opponent is or what your obstacle would be. Like, what do you need to overcome in order to let go of that karma and move on to the next cycle?
This book is actually very interesting because it goes over a state of being that occurs during and after death, where you can obtain those results much more immediately. You know, you can escape from karma in an instant. From reincarnation in an instant once you're dead, if you just say simple prayers. It's almost very Christian in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But just to preface this discussion, we first need to identify what a bardo is. The name of this book, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and its proper language is called the Bardo Thodol, which is the moment after death. In Buddhism, or in Tibetan Buddhism, a bardo is a kind of intermediary state when a change has occurred and another one has not yet. And the audiobook that we listened to while I was violently tripping on acid and ketamine, pretty cool to hear this all in that state, explicitly says, when you are on the verge of collapse from physical exhaustion or complete mental breakdown from emotional stress or daily moments of indecision even, these all carry characteristics of a bardo state. And there are 6 bardos. There are 3 that we won't be discussing much in this episode, but they're important for context.
I was a little bit surprised to learn that half of the bardos you go through after you die, but that not all of them you go through after you die, that there's some you go through while still living, and that these more pertain to states of dreaming, meditation, and then the last one, I believe, is samadhi. So the first one, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, but it's the Kaine Bardo. And this goes on from when you're born to when you die. It's when the mind stream withdraws from the body. So this is like daydreaming. You know, everyone does this. Then you have the Rilam Bardo. It starts with an M. Anyway, it's the second Bardo of the dream state. So this is something that's achieved through meditation and developed practice. Presumably, this might be using magic. This is using some sort of focused attention. And then the third one is the Samten Bardo. And this is experienced by people who are very good at meditation and achieve samadhi on demand, which is like what Aleister Crowley's talking about in Liber O. You want to be able to get to there on demand, which helps you prepare for the remaining 3 bardos, which happen beginning right before you're about to croak.
I find comparing the magical mindset to a bardo state, or even just saying it is one, to be a great simplification of it.
Well,
that makes a lot of sense to me.
It also makes sense because when you're doing magic, you're learning how to balance and equilibrate certain god forms and energies, which then when you die, you just end up being pounced upon by those energies, and depending on your relationship to them, you could have a good time or not a good time.
I like having a bunch of different avatars inside of yourself, and when you die, you retain your consciousness, and you have all these forms that you're familiars that you're friendly with on the in the other world, I guess. And you're conscious, so you're going to go through the bardos in like a more intense manner. It keeps getting crazier and crazier.
The Bardo Thodol explicitly states that it's an illusion, and that all of these god forms and these things that you experience during at least the first bardo, the Chichai Bardo. Bah! I try to give it the accent, and it sounds stupid. Look. The Chichai Bardo, all right? It's all aspects of yourself. And really, like, throughout even some of the more trippier and psychedelic experiences of these different god forms, at any point, if you acknowledge them as aspects and projections of your own psyche, they stop, and you are presented again with the clear light.
Which is important. That's what you want. You don't want something besides the clear white light, and you want the brightest one you can get. And then the goal is to identify with it and to hold with it. And if you can do that, then you're liberated and attain Dharmakaya.
Before we go any further, it kind of brings me up an idea of why human sacrifice at like when they're in this godhead or when they're in this state of meditation, it's like they immediately just shoot up to the top and they skip some of these bardos, perhaps.
Actually, it's mentioned later on. This is apparently not a good thing to do for the dead. We'll get into it later when we start discussing like the different hell realms. But
according to this practice, it's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some cults maybe have done that to people, get them all fucking drunk or high and then just kill him at the altar, and it's like, yeah, he went up to the god. He's cool.
You mean the victim of the sacrifice.
But I mean, sometimes they're not a victim. You know, sometimes it's like the most, you know, important thing in your life that you've been trying to do, and that's part of your belief, and it's okay.
I believe Dingus thought that you meant like sacrificing a chicken for your dead cousin or something. That's arise, considered a bad
chicken.
Thing.
Arise, chicken. Arise, chicken.
I'm Tibetan monk Frankenstein chicken.
Behold, I have lost weight. Manually with
look
this.
At good, sir. Look at good, sir.
I need to lose 20 more pounds or I'll never be pretty.
So obviously that kind of character is like so trapped in the Bardo of his material world.
Mm-hmm. He won't recognize the clear white light because this thing dawns upon you before your last breath. That's important because it dawns again upon you, but it's after your last breath. And if you get off the ride on the first showing of the clear white light, that is what you want to do. If you are being a good little Buddha, that's...
You'll go straight to it, right?
Like ideally.
Like a moth to a flame, well, right?
There's always a single step of recognizing it. And the Bardo is very clear on this. It takes a little bit of training to recognize.
Well, people that are terrified of it will run from it and they'll try to cling to their ego. And I think that's what causes the trials to begin.
That's essentially what does. Yeah, because it gives an opportunity for karma to begin to enact itself.
Exactly. And then you have to, would they have a review and to go through the karma?
That's actually like something I found very interesting in all this too, is the way it presents karma in the Bardo state, or at least the way the Bardo Thodol, which was written by a 15-year-old, I just want to throw that out there, presents karma is as demons dragging you along the path of incarnation, dragging you further and deeper away from what is described as the light ray of compassion. It's a bit like grace in Christianity, where it's described as just the essential good. So the person to see the clear white light for the first time, it's like the ultimate ego death. It's when your senses have faded and you're falling into yourself while you die. At this moment, the first glimpsing of the Bardo of the clear light of reality, which is the infallible mind of the Dharmakaya, is experienced by all sentient beings. The Dharmakaya, it up, is essentially like this mythological kind of metaphysical Buddha body that is comprised of five virtues, which in the world of flesh are turned into the five poisons. If the expiration is about to cease, turn the dying over on the right side, which posture is called the lying posture of a lion. The throbbing of the arteries on the right and left side of the throat is to be pressed. If the person dying be disposed to sleep, or if the sleeping state advances, that should be arrested, and the arteries pressed gently but firmly. Thereby, the vital force will not be able to return from the median nerve, and will be sure to pass through the brahmanic aperture. Now the real setting face to face is to be applied.
So they don't want your spirit to go out through your butt. They want you to go out through the aperture at the top of your head.
Yeah, there would be a shitload of research involved in this video if we tried to get involved in the anatomy, which is like an entire separate medicine system.
It's worth mentioning, though, the lying posture of the lion is what the Buddha lied down in when he was going to die, which, historically speaking, happened after he ate some very bad pork, which he knew was bad and didn't want to insult the person who served it to him, but made his followers bury the pork and give it a ceremony of burial as if something had died, like maybe themselves. And then the Buddha ate the pork and laid down on his right side and died.
That's controversial.
Yeah, but it's like a plugging of life support.
But he had his faculties.
Yeah, but...
But the lying on the right side helps. That's important. They always want to put you on the right side because that aids in the passing somehow.
The heart is on the right side, so you're putting pressure on your heart.
After you do this, you are to say this. You are to lean very close into their ear, not touching, and whisper this to them firmly but softly. Oh, nobly born, the time hath now come for thee to seek the path. Thy breathing is about to cease. Thy guru hath set thee face to face before the clear light, and now thou art about to experience it in its reality, in the Bardo, where all things are like the void and cloudless sky, and the naked, spotless intellect is like unto a transparent vacuum without any circumference or center. At this moment, know thou thyself, and abide in that state. There's a large emphasis on non-action in the Bardo, and at this moment, really, it doesn't take a whole lot of explanation. The book is very blunt, but at this moment, you have fallen into yourself, your senses of the outside world has faded, and you are beginning to experience your own mind. That the last thing you'll experience where you see this.
This is why Aleister Crowley was considered a Buddhist. And then when we begin to unravel what, like, the language in the Book of the Law, it's very much like this, the transparent vacuum without circumference or center being no eat.
Yeah, that to me struck me, because the whole spotless intellect is like unto a transparent vacuum without circumference or center. This is literally being completely disoriented with no sensory input whatsoever. So when your body shuts off and you separate from your body spiritually, you're not getting any more feedback from the outside world. And that can be an extremely terrifying place, because you don't know what's up from down. It's like being underwater deep. So deep, there's no light, and you don't know which way to swim up.
This is kind of a good thing, though, because there aren't any other projections or demons or angels to harass you. That makes it a bit easier to identify with the state, and the fact that you're still in your body also makes there less distractions when you see this, and that's why it's beneficial to identify with it at this point.
But it also tells you not to struggle, right? It tells you not to waste energy trying to get out or like see something, because it's not going to work.
There's a large emphasis on non-action throughout the instructions, even post-death, even when you become what we would call a ghost.
Ah.
Yeah, that's why they have like a close friend, but or better, like a guru, your guru, say it softly to you so that like it puts you down. It puts you to sleep.
It's a very intimate moment.
You recognize the voice. You're not questioning at any moment, like, whose voice is that? You know whose voice that is at all times. So you're more isolated, and you can focus on the experience.
So depending on the karma of the person, they'll see the light for a longer or shorter period of time. In Jacob's Ladder, we saw Jacob saw it for a very short period of time, and it did frighten him back down further and further into the Bardos, where he had to experience more. So you know that the person has gone beyond the first bardo when a yellowish liquid begins to appear from the various apertures of the body. And those who have led an evil life or have unsound nerves, the light only endures for the snap of a finger. For others, though, it takes as long for the eating of a meal, which actually is about the length of time that I experienced the Sophia. So there's some sort of rhythm in the body, they suspect, that links your capability to hold with this energy. And the more afraid and distracted you are, the less time you're going to experience it, and the more frightening it'll be when you experience it.
It takes discipline, because at this point you're also starting to experience oxygen deprivation, and the more energy you waste on being nervous or afraid of what's about to happen to you, maybe for the things you've done, honestly, it's like karma violently yanks you out of your body. But the more energy you waste on that, the shorter that oxygen is going to spread.
Yeah, like the harder you jump in, the better off you are, which sounds a little scary.
I have a personal story. When my dad was on his deathbed, he had cancer and was dying from complications with therapy, obviously. But he was raised Catholic, and the priest came in and did you know how he does the rites before somebody passes? He had been unconscious for nearly a week, and when the priest did the rites, there were tears falling out of his eyes. So he was unconscious, but he could hear his guru whispering to him to let go. And he was so scared to die. He was afraid for all of us, not knowing what to do without him. I could see in that moment that he was able to let go. And he also had a premonition of his mother before he died, and then he probably went to her, is what I'm assuming, because he didn't want to leave the people that were alive. But it was really weird to see him break down like that once the priest came in and blessed him, and then he left immediately after that.
It honestly, that makes sense to me. Context: I had an aunt that died. I didn't know her particularly well, but I know that her son had died maybe about a year before, and she developed like a number of mental illnesses after that, and it essentially killed her because she wouldn't eat and developed a panic disorder.
Oh.
But she was completely shut off to the outside world. Like, nothing you would say would get through to her, but she would still yell, "Brian! Brian!" And that was the name of her son.
So yeah, if you're like dying and you're still calling out for Brian, you might just miss the clear light or even be startled by it. But at some point, your breathing stops, at which point you're still in the Chikai Bardo, But now you have the opportunity to see the second clear light. And it says, but if it be feared that the primary clear light hath not been recognized, then it can certainly be assumed that there is a dawning that is called the second clear light, which dawneth in somewhat more than a mealtime period after the expiration hath ceased. So it's like you get a vision of the clear light and then you stop breathing. And there's a little bit of a pause, and then boom, you get a second clear white light.
At this point, you're clinically dead.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we'll get into this later. Like, there's a point where the Bardo states become like distinctly different. And I think before you start seeing what you would call ghosts and things like that, your consciousness still resides in the corpse.
Mm-hmm.
While on the second stage of the Bardo, one's body is the nature of that called the shining illusory body, a body of completely mental nature, takes the form of one's previous body and is complete with all the senses, even if the deceased lacked them in life.
Which is that, dope. Which is,
yeah, it is. But imagine how fucked up it would be if you're blind all your life and the first thing you see is demons.
Oh, yeah, that'd be, you know. Hopefully you remember something of, maybe that helps you remember. You're like, wait a minute, I don't have eyes. Why am I seeing demons? Maybe I'm dead.
Imagine seeing yourself for the first time and you're not.
And you can't even use your penis. Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks.
That which is called the second stage of the Bardo dwelleth upon the thought body. The knower hovereth within those places to which its activities had been limited. If at this time this special teaching be applied efficiently, then the purpose will be fulfilled, for the karmic illusions will not have come yet, and therefore he, the deceased, I guess we should say they, turn hither and thither from his aim of achieving enlightenment.
When the consciousness principle getteth outside the body it saith unto itself, I am dead, or am I not dead? It can't determine this. It seeth in its relatives and connections as it had been used to seeing them before. It even heareth the wailings. The terrifying karmic illusions have not yet dawned, nor have the frightful apparitions or experiences caused by the lords of death yet come.
To sum it up, is telling you, like, before all the fucking demons and shit start showing up, you have a chance out.
But you still hover around the places where you did your still, like, work?
I'm pretty... Right. This feels like it's also describing the beginning stages of the out-of-body experience. You're going on as though you're going on as though you're alive, you know? Bardo describes in this state the feeling of shock and distress that people often are likely to feel
when
they
disbelief.
See their relatives crying from them. They're in denial.
They're in denial that they're dead and they're just sitting around and a lot, like I'm going to discuss near-death experiences at some point, but the first stage when you separate from your body finally is a sense of relief. And then you can look down on reality as your body is laying in it. And then you start to kind of float away from that and you move into the second clear white light. Hopefully, if you see this, you will move towards it because that's how you get out of that place of being a ghost. You know,
just to be funny for a sec, like in the Sixth Sense, Bruce Willis, he realizes he's dead and then he still gets up for work like after he knows he's dead.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't go to the white light, dude.
No,
he
didn't
want to.
There's no white light in the Shyamalan movies.
No, in the Shyamalan movies, you die. You just go see Macaulay Culkin.
I'm pretty sure it would be hell to be in a Shyamalan movie. Imagine being the Avatar kid. Don't. Nobody ever liked him again.
Never.
The guy in the wheelchair.
What?
The guy in the wheelchair. The Marine.
No.
No. The Last Airbender.
Yeah, that was that. That's a James Cameron movie you're thinking of.
We never speak of this.
Okay. Yeah. Whatever. Calling upon personal deities during the second clear white light.
This is the best part for me. I think this is really cool because, like, all right, you got a dead guy sitting there. You're like, hey, man, you know that like deity you got in your altar? Yeah, man. He's trying calling out to that thing right now.
Yeah, it's like,
he might come pick you up at a limo.
I got spells I want to do in the other world.
At this point, a lot of the information in the Bardo becomes deeply impactful for any occultist.
This is where you pull out your Yu-Gi-Oh deck and you're summoning your fucking defenses and shit.
Yeah, like whichever deity you worked with in your life, this is your moment. This is shoot your shot time. Like, come get me, Mom. Like, please.
O thou of noble birth, meditate upon thy own tutelary deity. Here the deity's name is to be mentioned by the reader. Do not be distracted. earnestly concentrate thy mind upon thy tutelary deity. Meditate upon him as if he were the reflection of the moon in water, apparent yet inexistent. Meditate upon him as if he were a being with a physical body. At this point, your thoughts aren't manifesting yet. You can still pretty much function as though you were a human. It's almost like your intellect is grounded in your human experience, but as you go on further into death without your, flesh, it's like you become further detached from that reality.
Yeah, it almost starts to fade out. Most people say that it starts to get really dark, and then there's the second clear white will appear, and usually they'll approach it and they'll see a savior figure, an angel, whatever has to do with how they were brought up. It's still attached to your ego in some way, but it's a representation of a spiritual power that you call to.
Like, if you
do have to call to it for it to appear.
Like if you worship Yog-Sothoth your whole life, you got to call out and let the tentacles take you now.
Or I have to ask for that golden apple, and I have to look for.
It would be helpful if
you
I
look
were
for Sophia.
Yeah, if I were tripping out and dying, and someone's like Sophia, I'd probably be like, okay. That would help a lot, actually. So I see the compassion in all this, because if you don't go with the Sophia at this point, then you end up in the Jacob's Ladder movie of the Bardos, which is the fifth Bardo, the Chonid Bardo, where the karmic apparitions appear. Woo!
Nice.
No, they're coming for you now.
Right, which is why you want to deal with it during the first and second showings of the clear light. And the Bardo was written in this way that's kind of like a gradient, where it's like, if you didn't get out this time, then when you saw this and when you saw that, you should have noticed this and you should have noticed that. Now get ready for this next thing. So the side that we're moving away from is the side that we can see as the survivors of the dying. It's the part where we're in the Western culture, you would call in a priest and you would give last rites. And this is something that we have in our culture that we believe in, like the angels coming, or it sort of dips into the second part, the next Bardo, the fifth Bardo, because in our culture, sometimes our family members come and get us. So it's not really clear which side of the Bardo it's referring to, at least in Western culture.
Your family members are getting you?
Well, yeah, sometimes when people die, they'll say they saw, like,
oh, okay,
somebody they loved.
Okay, or I'll get into, okay.
I mean, you experience projections of your own mind in the Bardo.
It starts, but it starts while you're still alive. I actually got to witness my father passing away, and he went through these stages, and I could kind of tell he was totally out of it on medicine and stuff for cancer. He did recollect to his wife at the time that he saw his mother as an apparition sitting on his bed, like how your mother would come sit on your bed and check on you when you're sick. She came and did that to him, and he saw that. And then he told his wife, like, he was still conscious when he had this vision. And then when I came to visit him, he was unconscious, and everybody was waiting, you know, just being by his side, right? The whole family had come down. We were basically waiting for him to wake up, and he was just sitting there. We called in the Catholic priest that married him and my mom, his first wife, and he did his last rites while he was in the room with all of us.
So it was like his guru. It was the person who married him?
Yeah, to my mother, his wow. first wife. So that was his first love with all, that's who he had all his children with. So all two of us.
So somebody that he loved and trusted.
Yeah, but it's like, I feel like the bridge was more important to him than any of the other ones.
But he was the exact right person to have read the last rites, is my point.
Right. There was nobody else from like his childhood. This was like something that had to do with something that happened to him. And I know that he was worried about his kids. I think that's why he held on so long, and he was unconscious and he couldn't wake up. So when the priest came in and he read the rites, my dad, he was under, like he was unconscious and whatever. But tears started to pour out of his eyes while he was in the bed after getting the rites read, and but 10 or 15 minutes later he died. And it's really weird, because I could feel him let go. And I think the fact that there was a ritual done, I don't think that he understood that we didn't need him. Like, we could tell him we're okay, we're fine, we don't need you. We could say all that stuff with language, but until the rites were read, he didn't understand that. And I think the tears were of relief, and he went to the first light. He went into it. Because there's no, like, I don't think there's anything dragging on with his soul. Like, we're not haunted or anything, right? My sister has dreams about him, but I have him rarely, but he doesn't really like live on here. It's only like when you really need him. You know how, like, if somebody moves on, they'll come back every once in a while, but it's not like they're a ghost that lives here forever or that goes into a kind of like, this is what we're going to talk about, is if you refuse the first light, then you have to like wait for the second one, which is what?
But you're still good. You're still in the first bar. You're still in the fourth bardo.
Yeah. But what if you choose to stay behind? Because I feel like some souls that get trapped here and then they have to relive things because they are not willing. My father actually understood that we let go of him and he was allowed to detach. He needed to be allowed to detach from his ego before he moved on.
Well, the bardo pretty explicitly states that it takes about 49 days for a soul, quote-unquote soul, for an individual to reincarnate. I can say from experience that after my grandmother died, I had various disturbing dreams about her, and she did not seem happy, and I felt that she kind of carried on with her stuff, because she was extremely attached to her belongings in life.
Mm.
They defined her. Yep. They were her pride.
My dad was the monetary foundation of our entire family. Like, he provided all the money for us, and I think he was afraid. It's not that he wanted the money. He was afraid we couldn't do it.
I can honestly say for about a month after her death, and then no longer, I would have dreams about her, or honestly, I don't know, just kind of sense of presence around her items staring at me. It's kind of a weird thing to describe, but I can guarantee she wasn't happy with us because she kind of wasn't happy with any of our real personalities, just what she thought of us. I don't know if that one should make it in the show. But anyways, so I had a dream where I'm sitting between my two aunts in a church, and they're both dressed in black. And I look behind me to this old hag, like, just characteristically, like, kind of like a witch with a wart, almost, you know, that kind of figure. But I don't remember her face too well, because within a few seconds of me looking at her, her face melted into the face of my grandmother, and she was dressed in like a long black dress and a very large black hat, and she had this wrathful but vacant expression staring into me. And then I turned around to my aunts, and I tapped their shoulder and I said, "Hey, look who it is." And I think it was Carol Beth, my aunt Carol Beth. She turned around and said, "Well, it sure is, isn't it?" "It is, though." And then the dream ended.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she may have been going through the bardos in this stage as it's described, because you have another chance to go with the clear light. But at this point, things start to get psychedelic for you because, like you said, you now can travel with just a thought. You can hear when someone is like saying your name or thinking about you or touching your stuff if you're really attached to it.
Yep.
The essential idea is that you are one with the universe, but you don't realize it. And because of this, you can go anywhere.
You get projected a lot more when you have unfinished business. Like, even if, like how my sister dreams about my dad all the time, it's because she has unfinished business. They both have some kind of thing that they need to work out. So she calls on him a lot when she's dreaming. Maybe I don't, only in certain circumstances, but it's like, it doesn't matter. But it's like, you always feel like that, like Dingus, your dream about your grandma and your aunts, it's like they're really there. And I even wonder if your aunt had the same dream.
Maybe. I don't know.
Shared dreams is actually a thing.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the concept. I just never thought about it.
You know, it might could work with like visitations like that. And visitations in dream setting could be very well somebody trapped before they see the second light.
So yeah, this is like that part in the movie where the person's dead and they can hear everyone crying and screaming. They're like, "I'm right here. I'm right here. Don't be sad." And they can't hear. And they just go on screaming. And they're like, "Oh, I got to get." And they walk away upset.
I got to get the penny off the floor.
And you can't. And you just end up frustrated. So it says, "At that time, sounds, lights, and rays, all three are experienced. These awe, frighten, and terrify and cause much fatigue. At this moment, the setting face to face with the bardo during the experiencing of reality is to be applied. Call the deceased by name. And correctly and distinctly explain to him as follows. O nobly born, listen with full attention, without being distracted by furniture. There are six states of bardo, namely, the natural state of bardo while in the womb, the bardo of the dream state, the bardo of ecstatic equilibrium." This is a better explanation of the bardos. While in deep meditation, And at the moment of death, the bardo during the experiencing of reality, the bardo of the inverse process of samsaric existence. These are the six.
It's time for some vocabulary. Hang on.
Samsaric. What does samsaric mean?
So it's like, all right, this is the you are here map of the bardos. It's like, all right, man, you've gone through the first four. Now you're in the fifth. Get it?
Sanguine. Relaxed.
We may call it samsara here in the West, or sangsara, but it's the sea of sadness that this is like the hospital floor over which the wobbly wheel is rolling in Jacob's ladder.
Samsara is a Sanskrit or Pali word that means world. It also is the concept of rebirth and cyclicality of all life, matter, and existence. A fundamental belief of most Indian religions, popularly is the cycle of death and rebirth. It inherently contains suffering. At some levels, great suffering. O nobly born, thou wilt experience three bardos. The bardo of the moment of death, the bardo during the experiencing of reality, and the bardo while seeking rebirth. Of these three, up to yesterday, thou hadst experienced the bardo of the moment of death. Although the clear light of reality dawned upon thee, thou wert unable to hold on. So thou hast to wander here. Now henceforth thou art going to experience the other two, the Chanyad Bardo and the Sidpa Bardo. Thou wilt pay undistracted attention to that which I am about to set thee face to face, and hold on. O nobly born, that which is called death hath now come. Thou art departing from this world, but thou art not the only one. Death cometh to all. Do not cling, in fondness and weakness, to this life. Even though thou clingest out of weakness, thou hast not the power to remain here. Thou wilt gain nothing more than wandering in the samsara. Be not attached to this world. Be not weak. Remember the precious Trinity.
Spectacles, testicles.
Do I get to read the rest of it?
Oh, or are we popcorning or what?
Well, I think this is a good point to just say that these monks read this to anybody who's dying.
Yes.
This isn't like, they're just telling, they're like, hey, like, dude, like you clearly weren't, if you're still here, like you weren't strong enough, or like you didn't have the knowledge to get off of the ride. So now you have to go on this other one and you're stuck in the carnival.
It's also explicitly stated that people can reach this state. Even the most experienced and well-trained of monks and priests can reach this state if their mind and their faculties are weakened by severe illness.
Yeah, totally.
O nobly born, whatever fear and terror may come to thee in the Chanyad Bardo, forget not these words, and bearing their meaning at heart, go forwards. In them lieth the vital secret of recognition. Alas, when uncertain experiencing of reality is dawning upon me here, with every thought of fear or terror or awe for all apparitional experience, with every thought of fear or terror or awe for all set aside, may I recognize whatever visions appear as the reflections of mine own consciousness. May I know them to be of the nature of apparitions in the bardo, when at this all-important moment of opportunity, of reaching a great end, may I not fear the bands of peaceful and wrathful deities, mine own thought form.
Repeat thou these verses clearly, and remembering their significance, as thou repeatest them, go forwards, person. Thereby, whatever visions of awe or terror appear, recognition is certain, and forget not this vital secret art lying therein.
O nobly born, when thy body and mind were separating, thou must have experienced a glimpse of the pure truth, subtle, sparkling, bright, dazzling, glorious, and radiantly awesome.
Woo.
In appearance like a mirage moving across a landscape in springtime in one with stream of vibrations. Be not daunted, thereby nor terrified, awed. That is the radiance of thine own true nature, and you should recognize it. From the midst of that radiance, the natural sound of reality, reverberating like a thousand thunders simultaneously sounding, will come. That is the natural sound of thine own real self. Be not daunted thereby, nor terrified, nor awed. The body which thou hast now is called the thought body of propensities. Since thou hast not a material body of flesh and blood, whatever may come, sounds, lights, or rays, are all three unable to harm thee. Thou art incapable of dying. It is quite sufficient for thee to know that these apparitions are thine own thought forms. Recognize this to be the bardo. In other words, anything that can terrify you or create any kind of emotional or physical feeling in your soul, that is something that's an apparition of something that you're remembering that you need to let go of. Literally, you are incapable of dying and you should not fear moving on to the next part.
Yes.
O nobly born rabbit, if thou dost not now recognize thine own thought forms, whatever of meditation or of devotions thou mayest have performed while in the human world, if that thou hast not met with this present teaching, the lights will daunt thee, the sounds will awe thee, and the rays will terrify thee. Shouldest thou not know this all-important key to the teachings, not being able to recognize the sounds, lights, and rays, thou wilt have to wander in the samsara.
I know that because I listen to Oasis.
And the samsara is literally what Jacob's Ladder is. Pretty much 80% of the movie is that.
Yep. And what's interesting is because during the dawning of the peaceful deities, the text seems to suggest that you sort of don't know you're dead for about 3.5 days, at which point you kind of start to wake up from your swoon, and then you have a chance to witness the good deities, which offer you opportunities to go into the clear light. So really, it's a lot like Jacob's Ladder if you get this far in the story, where you might go to your job like 2 whole days in a row, dude, before you're like, oh no, I'm fucking dead.
There's some other guy sitting in my chair, and like when I push the papers, he gets scared and runs to the bathroom and cries.
I'm fucking dead. They don't understand me, not because I don't speak Spanish, but because dude, I'm dead and I don't have to fold burritos anymore.
No, if you try to type your fucking password into the computer and it doesn't work anymore, like you can't touch the computer, like the computer doesn't respond to you. How am I supposed to work?
I have an alternate interpretation. So when it mentions thou wilt have to wander in the samsara, I think what it's mostly referring to it's from a Buddhist perspective. If you don't recognize it here, if you don't calm down and try to collect yourself during the Bardo experience, you have no hope of achieving enlightenment now. And you will have to continue reincarnating because samsara is world.
Yeah. If you're attached to world, then you'll
stay here.
You're more likely to reincarnate. And not only that, but probably something lower if you're not able to let go.
We'll get into that.
Oh. There's like a tarot, like the hero's journey through the tarot cards. It's like if you become the world and then you don't immediately realize that you're the fool once again in like a higher understanding and there's a new journey before you, then you failed. It's kind of like you're not the world, you're the fool again.
You have to start again at the first level.
You're just nine of swords all day and all night and all day all night, and Jem
really
never stops playing that 24 hours song, just keeps going. This is where it gets a bit technical, because the dawning of the peaceful deities could be a bit overwhelming. They shoot lasers. Would you like to tell us about it, Malachor?
Then from the central realm, called the spreading forth of the seed, the Bhagavan Virochana, white in color, and seated upon a lion throne, bearing an 8-spoked wheel in his hand, and embraced by the mother of space of heaven, will manifest himself to thee. It is the aggregate of matter resolved into this primordial state, which is the blue light. The wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu, blue in color, shining, transparent, glorious, dazzling from the heart of the Virochana as the father, mother, will shoot forth and strike against thee with the light so radiant that thou wilt scarcely be able to look at it. It's like a special beam cannon.
Special beam cannon!
I fucking hate Dragon Ball Z, I have to tell the truth.
It literally is supposed to be that kind of scary, though.
I mean, I would shit my pants if somebody threw a fucking Kamehameha at me. I'd be like...
It's supposed to be a little, like, oh shit! Fuck!
I mean, maybe they're, like, kind of saying they're tapping into these light-colored energy, you know, for their chi.
Nyani!
Yeah.
Along with all that stuff, there will also shine a dull white light from the devas, which will strike against thee in thy front. Thereupon, because of the power of bad karma, the glorious blue light of the wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu will produce in thee fear and terror, and thou wilt flee from it. Thou wilt beget a fondness from the dull white light of the devas.
Are devas like hot lady goddesses, or are those devis? Oh, that's both devas and devis.
Yeah.
Devas?
That's both them, right? That's like the realm of like kind of gods, like demigods, I guess.
Whitney Houston, high as fuck.
It's just Tina Turner and...
I don't know that I would include... Well, I mean, I guess she might have once been attractive. I don't know. I'm not old like the rest of you.
Ah, sick burn, bro.
Yeah, I just like reminding you of it.
Yeah, just wait. You just wait, buddy.
Yeah, one day I'll be 70 and y'all be 80, and then it won't even matter if I call you old because I might die first anyways.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be reading you the Bardo.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait.
I'll be whispering guru sounds in your ear while you die.
Well, don't do it like that.
Also, women live longer than men, so fuck you guys.
Oh man, Mari's gonna get us all.
We're gonna get the sexy Bardo reader.
I'm extremely unhealthy, so maybe not.
Honestly, fucking like
rooting for Dingus.
I could do it if I don't fucking overdose.
Don't fuck up. Don't fuck up. Luke's also got I'm like rooting for Luke too. I'm rooting for everybody.
I put too much ketamine up my ass and now I'm in hell.
Malachor, you're already a boss ass. Like, you're awesome. You have like a metal band and shit. You're cool.
Oh, thank you.
You've
plug
already
your metal band.
Yeah, I mean, he's already like a boss. So
plug your metal band.
Revolting sounds. We haven't played a gig since before the shutdown, and it sucks.
Because you're
revolting sounds.
Because you're what? Your bandmates are scared to play.
No, there's just. Hasn't been an opportunity, and we're all busy working and shit, so.
Yeah, it's not okay. All mask shit.
Well, good luck to you.
If you're dying, and you're holding on, and you have to choose between being blasted with a giant blue laser and the swanky lounge where you hear this radio show going on, run straight into the fucking laser and think not twice of the chatter.
Yeah, because cannibals are listening to that radio show.
And they want to gnaw on your femurs.
Also, herbivores are listening to that show and they want to gnaw on your carrots.
If you're Osiris, that could work out, I guess.
I'm a snowman. That's my name.
I like what we need to read.
So this goes on for some time until it gets really juicy.
The dawning of the wrathful deities from the 8th to the 14th day. For those of you who aren't terribly familiar with Buddhism, not saying that I am myself, this may end up being particularly interesting to you. Therefore, the cessation of the dawning of the peaceful and the knowledge-holding deities who come to welcome one, 58 flame-enhaloed, wrathful, blood-drinking deities come to dawn, who are only the former peaceful deities in changed aspect according to the place or psychic center of the Bardo body of the deceased whence they proceed. Nevertheless, they will not resemble them. This is the Bardo of wrathful deities, and they, being influenced by fear, terror, and awe, recognition becometh more difficult. The intellect, gaining not in independence, passeth from one fainting state to a round of fainting states. Yet, if one but recognize a little, it is easier to be liberated at this stage. Essentially saying that if you've had your religious training, you'll recognize them as not trying to kill you. If it be asked why, the answer is because of the dawning of the radiances, which produce fear, terror, and awe. The intellect is undistractedly alert in one-pointedness. That is why. So it's not written here, but in the videos that I've watched when I researched this topic, the reason that they're expressed as wrathful is because it is wrath in and of itself is kind of an inverse expression of peace. It's the unyielding and unmoving side of peace.
I'm happy you said that, because if we remember Oppenheimer's quote of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a scene where Arjuna says to Krishna, like, I don't want to go kill all these people. They're like kind of distant relatives of me. And I love these people deep down inside. Why would I want to go kill them? And then Krishna, putting on his wrathful, multi-headed, multi-armed, multi-tongued form, is like, dude, this is your karma, do what I say, basically. So we know from that text that these peaceful deities, even Krishna, like happy little Krishna, has this multi-armed, multi-headed form that is utterly terrifying and is an aspect of the wrathful side of peace, which is what Oppenheimer was kind of, well, it all made sense what Oppenheimer was saying. It really did, because that's what he was referring to. Yeah, it ended the war, supposedly.
Yeah, ended the war and it fucking brought peace, or
they're killed
100 million people or 100,000 people.
They're not going away, and you don't recognize them, but you're becoming terrified of them. And because of this, their expression changes into something something frightening, because they won't move.
This is very important to the magician, because all your bullshit's going to come back at you, and you need to deal with it. You need to face it. And get over yourself, I guess, in your mistakes. If mistakes is the right word. By having meditated on the description of these blood-drinking deities while in the human world, and by having performed some worship or praise of them, or at least by having seen their painted likeness and their images. Upon witnessing the drawing of the deities at this stage, recognition of them will result, and liberation. In this lieth the art.
That is a big tip for magicians, especially of the left-hand path, that work with demons, because it says here in this text, if you spend some time worshiping or praising them, you'll have a better idea of what to expect. And even if you've just gone to a museum or your friend's house or you've seen them painted, you're much more likely to be like, oh, that's the wrathful form. Oh, he's come for some enlightened purpose. That's why he has a bloody this and a pointy that. It's because he wants to do that to my false ego self. Go ahead.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I was fucking with you. Go for it.
Oh, nobly born, licit undistractedly, not having been able to recognize when the peaceful deities shone upon thee in the bardo above, thou hast come wandering thus far. Now, on the eighth day, the blood-drinking wrathful deities will come to shine.
Woo.
Act so as to recognize them without being distracted. O nobly born, the great glorious Buddha Haruka, dark brown of color, with three heads, six hands, and 4 feet firmly postured, the right face being white, the left red, and the central dark brown, the body emitting flames of radiance, the 9 eyes widely opened in terrifying gaze, the eyebrows quivering like lightning, and the protruding teeth glistening and set over one another, giving vent to sonorous utterances of ah la la and ha ha, and piercing whistling sounds. The hair of a reddish yellow color, standing on end and emitting radiance, the heads adorned with dried human skulls, and the symbols of the sun and moon, black serpents, and raw human heads forming a garland for the body. The first of the right hands holding a wheel, the middle one a sword, the last one a battle axe. The first of the left hands, a bell. The middle one, a skull bowl. And the last one, a plowshare. His body embraced by the mother, Buddha... Oh, fuck. Buddha Kruttish. His body embraced by the mother... His body embraced by the mother... His body embraced by the mother, Buddha Kruttish Harima. Jesus, fuck. Her head clinging to his neck, and her left putting to his mouth a red shell filled with blood, making a palatal sound like a crackling and a clashing sound, and a rumbling sound as loud as thunder, emanating from the two deities, radiant flames of wisdom, blazing from every hair pore of the body, in each one containing a flaming dorji.
Sure.
Yeah, okay, yeah. The two deities together thus, standing with one leg bent and the other straight and tense on a dais supported by horned eagles, will come forth from within thine own brain and shine vividly upon thee. Fear that not, be not awed. Know it will come. Fear that not, be not awed. Know it to be the embodiment of thine own intellect, as it is thine own tutelary deity. Be not terrified, be not afraid, for in reality it is the Bhagavan Varochana, the father-mother. Simultaneously with the recognition, liberation will be obtained. If they be recognized, merging thyself at one moment into the tutelary deity, Buddhahood and the Sambhogakaya will be one. So I haven't quite... research their cosmology enough to tell you exactly what's referred to here, but Buddhahood in the Sambhogakaya is referred to as becoming a Buddha in the body of joy. I think it was the southern or the eastern body of joy.
Which is pretty dope. That's lit.
Yeah. I suppose at a basic level you can interpret that as you'll be pretty happy.
It's a heaven realm. You could, you know, reincarnate as far as Svati's left pinky toe.
Hmm.
But if one flee from them through on terror being begotten, then on the ninth day, the blood-drinking deities of the Vajra order will come to receive one. I'm not sure.
Something.
I'm sure the Cenobites are one order, but it's hard to know which. Thereupon.
Right.
Thereupon, the setting face-to-face is calling the deceased by name. Oh, nobly born person. Listen undistractedly. He of the blood-drinking Vajra order, named Bhagavan Vajra Haruka, dark blue in color with 3 faces, 6 heads, 4 feet firmly postured, the first hand holding a dorje in the middle, one a skull bowl, and the last a battle axe, and the first one a left bell, in the middle one a skull bowl, so on and so forth. Fear it not. Be not terrified. Be not awed. Know it to be the embodiment of thine own intellect, as it is thine own tutelary deity. So here's the idea. These things just come at you in every possible color of wrathfulness. And the job of you is to be like, that's my Krishna, that's my Sophia, that's my Raphael Splinter Ninja Turtle God, whatever, man. You have to be like, that evil deity, that's my savior, and he's trying to help me.
Kind of intense.
And I'm sure there's like a lot of symbolism in each, what hand, what tool is, you know, being held. And I don't know anything about that.
Oh, look, I mean, with 1 week of research, there's only so much you can do. And any occult document you'll come across will be particularly culturally dense. But this becomes very apparent once you move from the west to the east. We want to do a Taoism episode one day, but that will take a long time to prepare just because of the cultural density of Taoism. And there's a similar situation here. But here we get to the 11th day where it starts getting fucking metal. You're beginning to experience the effects of your karma.
Yeah, it drags you lower and lower. This one seems like that you accept that you want to still be alive.
It could be. Honestly, there's a lot of mentions in the Bardo of monks being incarnated again. You know, religious people who maybe they don't want to incarnate again, but they may not have lived a great life. In some of the research that I've done for this, there were mentions of the way that karma works, where your good deeds don't necessarily cancel out your bad karma, and you experience the consequences of both. Anyhow, this is the 11th day. Yet, though set face to face thus, if through the power of evil propensities, terror and awe being produced, not recognizing them to be tutelary deities, one flee from them. Then, on the 11th day, the blood-drinking lotus order will come to receive one. Thereupon, setting face to face is, calling upon the deceased by name, thus. O nobly born, on the 11th day, the blood-drinking deity of the lotus order, called the Bhagavan Padma Haruka, of reddish-black color, having 3 faces, 6 hands, and 4 feet firmly postured, the right face white, the left blue, the central darkish red, in the first of the right 6 hands holding a lotus, in the middle one a trident staff, in the last a club, in the first of the left hands a bell, in the middle one a skull bowl filled with blood, in the last a small drum, his body embraced by the mother, Padma Kratisharima, her right hand clinging to his neck, her left offering to his mouth a red shell filled with blood. The father and the mother in union will issue from the western quarter of thy brain and come upon thee. Fear that not, be not terrified, and be not awed. Rejoice, recognize them to be the product of thine own intellect, as they are thine own tutelary deity. Be not afraid. In reality, they are the father, mother, Bhagavan Amitabha. Believe in them. Concomitantly with recognition, liberation will come. Through such acknowledging, recognizing them to be tutelary deities, in at one moment thou will merge into them and obtain Buddhahood. And before the end of the free show, I finally got our dictionary definition.
Oh, let's hear it.
All right, so this starts with another word called Trikaya. In the Trikaya doctrine, Sanskrit meaning 3 bodies, it is a Mahayana Buddhist teaching that on both the nature of reality and the nature of Buddhahood, the doctrine says that the Buddha has 3 kayas or bodies, the Dharmakaya, ultimate reality, the Sambhogakaya, the divine incarnation of Buddha, and the Nirminakaya, physical incarnation of Buddha. So this isn't exactly what we were reading about, because I'm sure there are differences in the Tibetan doctrine, but it gives you a good idea. The first word being Sambhogakaya is, it translates literally to body of enjoyment. It is the second mode or aspect of the Trikaya.
So I think it's important to tell people at this point in their post-death experience, if they happen to be listening to this podcast.
Wait! Sorry. This is the Buddha that appears to people teachers and gurus as a vision to teach them things and give them visionary experiences.
Yeah, so if you're at this point in your post-death journey, where you're being set upon by wrathful, blood-drinking, knife-having, furry, multi-faced demons, if you just recognize them as Jesus Christ or whatever your tutelary deity, you can actually reincarnate in that Sambhogakaya realm of heaven. You don't even have to incarnate as a person anymore. You can just appear as Sophia's left nipple for all of eternity. If that's what you can, if you can get over the fact that you are about to be flayed alive by the scariest thing you've ever seen, and learn to sing the Barney song to it, and identify with it as the own projection of your Buddha mind, then that means you are prepared to eat carrots and shoot lasers.
If you pay us, will tell you how not to go to hell.
Scottish Dalai Lama.
Will there ever be one?